Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Chaos Rising by Jonathan Yanez. Narrated by Rachel LeBlanc. 1. Taylor. The floor rumbled beneath them like an earthquake rolling over the landscape. Cheers and shouts echoed in Taylor's ears as she looked outside the chain-link fence. Hungry eyes returned her stare, roaring their chants for violence and blood. Before the world ended, a scenario such as this would have caused Taylor pause. Now, it was just another day.
"Hey, are you listening to me?"
Lou asked from the opposite side of the fence.
"It's not too late for us to switch. I can take him."
Taylor zeroed in on her partner. Lou was far from the protective type, but ever since they wrestled New Olympia from the clutches of the Dread, he was someone she could rely on.
"I told you, I'll be fine."
Taylor rolled her head from shoulder to shoulder with an audible crack. She stretched her arms and arched her back, releasing the tension brought on by so many miles of travel.
"You're not the only one that can fight."
"No, but you can't use your powers here," Lou reminded her. "You do, and you'll be disqualified. Then we'll both have much bigger problems to deal with."
"Easy there, Rage Wolf."
Taylor winked at Lou as the bell rang and any other hope of conversation died with the yell of the crowd.
"I might start getting the impression you care."
Lou mouthed something else, but Taylor shifted her mindset from talking to the ferocity the next few minutes would herald. She needed to be in a certain frame of mind for what was about to happen. Turning to face her opponent, Taylor forced herself to focus past the roaring crowd, past the blood-soaked canvas that spoke volumes, and toward her task. The local man she was about to fight bounced up and down on his toes. Introduced as Big T Terry Train, it was clear how he had come by his nickname. Easily 120 pounds heavier than her, and a good 6 inches taller, he looked more like a bear than a man. Taylor and Big T began to circle one another. Taylor bent her knees, keeping her arms up and loose. She returned the man's smile along with his gaze.
"This won't take long."
He lifted scarred knuckles and stepped toward her.
"If I were you, I'd think twice about that smile."
"I can't help it," Taylor said, moving in to meet his attack. "I know something you don't."
When the first blow fell, Taylor almost felt sorry for the man. Almost. She could tell he was pulling his punches when he landed a right hand. It was clear he intended to win, but was trying to inflict as little damage on her as possible in the process. The blow connected with her left arm when she moved to block the strike. She felt absolutely nothing. In fact, the only way she knew he must not have been using his full power was because his hand didn't break when it hit her. A dull thud, loud enough for only the two combatants to hear, was the only proof the punch actually connected. The mountain of a man recoiled as if he had been burned. He flexed his right hand, a look of disbelief crossing his eyes. The crowd roared in the makeshift wooden stands for more. Taylor had no intention of allowing her adversary to work out what must be happening, although her powers of steel-like skin and strength weren't as obvious as her abilities to levitate and blast energy from her hands, they would be noticed if the fight took too long. She pressed the attack, sending blows to the man's stomach and face. To her, it was all the same. Any strike landed was a win for her. She, too, pulled her punches. She wanted to beat the man, not kill him. With every blow, the noise of the crowd grew. The large man in front of her backpedaled, looking for an answer to Taylor's onslaught. He tried in vain to counterattack, but everything he tried, Taylor either deflected or sidestepped. Knuckles bleeding, the man abandoned trading blows with Taylor and wrapped both arms around her, seeking unsuccessfully to drag her down to the mat with his weight. It had no impact on Taylor. She wrapped both hands around the back of his head and held him in place.
What are you?
His face was a mess, his right eye swelling by the second and blood dripping from his mouth.
I'm something else. Taylor drove her head into his nose with minimal velocity. More blood flew through the air as the previous champion stumbled backward and fell to the canvas floor. As if on cue, the audience silenced. A latch was opened in the chain-link fence that made up the fighting cage, and a well-dressed, middle-aged man stepped inside. He hurried to Taylor's side and lifted her right hand in the air.
"Ladies and gentlemen, your new Queen of the Ring," he whispered into Taylor's ear.
"What's your name again?"
"Taylor Hart." In a booming voice, he said to the audience,
"Taylor, the heroine Hart."
The room exploded in a cacophony of applause, boot stomps, and shouts. Taylor looked to Lou, who shrugged his approval. Taylor wiped the blood from her knuckles on a dirty rag. She stood in what passed for the locker rooms, along with Lou and the announcer from the ring.
"We've played your game," she said. "When do we get to meet the person in charge?"
"Like I told you, we have a way of doing things here in Great Falls. Beating our champion in the ring was a means of getting her attention."
The man looked Taylor over again, pausing on her now clean knuckles.
"How did you beat Big T, by the way? There's not a scratch on you."
"She did it, and that's all you need to know, Buster," Lou growled.
"No need for violence,"
the announcer said, shying away from Lou, who had risen to his feet and was now letting his fingers drum on the hilt of his saber.
"My name's Larry, by the way. Well, like you said, she won fair and square. The mayor of Great Falls will see you both. I'll give you a moment to clean up. I'll be waiting outside once you're ready."
Larry left the locker room without a second glance behind him.
"What does he mean by clean up?" Lou asked, chuckling to himself. "Does he think we brought proper clothes with us?"
Taylor ran a hand through her hair. The grime that came with days of traveling stuck to her palm. "A shower wouldn't kill us, but there's no time. We lost enough of that with their insistence we fight in the ring."
"You were pretty good in there, by the way."
Lou lifted his green eyes to the deteriorating ceiling.
"Not perfect. Not better than I could have done. But pretty good."
"Please," Taylor said derisively. She wrangled her dark hair into the ponytail she usually wore.
"You would have had to go all elite gene in there to stand a chance. Your eyes would have gone yellow and the wolf would be out of the bag. It's bad enough we need to ask these people for their allegiance. If they knew the truth about us, we wouldn't stand a chance."
"They'll have to know sooner or later," Lou shrugged.
It was the beginning of a debate the two had rehashed over and over again during their trip from New Olympia.
"We should just tell them and be done with it."
"We're trying to build alliances and fight the dread," Taylor sighed. "We tell them about everything once and only once when we've gained their trust. I'm not having this conversation with you again."
"Hey."
Lou raised his hands in surrender.
"You're the boss. If you want to travel into this unknown country building alliances with half-truths, that's on you. I just think they have a right to know."
"And they will."
Taylor could hear the bite in her own words.
"Just not now."
Taylor and Lou had been on the road together for 2 long days, searching for the closest human settlement. On the way, they had gotten on one another's nerves more than once. If Taylor was honest with herself, it wasn't only Lou that was causing her stress. It was the many factors playing into their trip. It was leaving Sydney to train with Talon in New Olympia, as well as the lack of dread they encountered on their way to Great Falls.
"She'll be fine,"
Lou threw over his shoulder as he walked to the door.
"Frank and Melissa will take care of her, and that Talon guy. Sure, he's a guardian and believes in all that mumbo-jumbo, but he means well."
The last thing Taylor needed was somebody reassuring her that everything was going to be all right. Instead of answering Lou, she pushed past him and exited the building. As promised, Larry stood a few feet from the door, dusting off his pristine dress jacket with a miniature brush. When he noticed the pair heading toward him, he pocketed the grooming tool, greeting them with a toothy smile.
If you would follow me, I'll escort you to the mayor.
Without waiting for a reply, he turned and began weaving his way through the middle of the city of Great Falls. Taylor and Lou followed their escort in silence. Even a glance in Lou's direction was unnecessary. Taylor knew he was busy doing the same thing she was, examining the city's infrastructure. When they arrived at Great Falls, they decided to leave their solar-powered truck hidden deep in the brush covering either side of the road. There was no sense in drawing more attention to themselves than absolutely necessary. It turned out to be a good decision. As they strode through the town of Great Falls, the scene reminded Taylor more of a hybrid between a western-slash-Viking outpost than a modern-day city. Rough-looking men and equally rough-looking women were dressed in cowboy hats with bandanas, long coats, furs, and boots. Weapons ranged from handguns to every kind of axes and swords. Horses appeared to be the primary means of travel. The horses, along with the rare sighting of an ATV, were the only signs of transportation. The streets were clear of any debris. The buildings sported signs of food, gambling, and bars. Loud music drifted through more than a few windows. Despite the harsh exterior to the town, there was also a feeling of control. No fights were breaking out between the citizens. No gunshots or blood was being spilled. Taylor's mind did a quick study of everyone she came in contact with. Every single person they passed carried some kind of blade or gun. When her eyes met someone else's, she would be given a brief chin jerk of respect. It was clear the story of her fight in the cage was already spreading. These hard people appreciated brute strength. They would be a great ally if their mayor could be convinced. The sun beat down, accompanied by a dry wind that blew in from the east. Sweat dampened Taylor's brow as their walk took them up a steep hill.
How did Great Falls survive?
Lou questioned their guide.
When the world ended, what kept these people together?
Montanans are a stubborn gathering of survivors,
Lou said, slowing his gait. He looked relieved to have a sounding board, as if the silence wasn't bearable.
When the dread came knocking on our doors, we knocked back. Don't get me wrong, we suffered like everyone else. The city is nowhere near the size it used to be. We just took our first census last week. We have 352 people who still call this place home. The rest are just travelers passing through.
It seems like you're doing well, all things considered. Taylor motioned to the clean streets and buildings. Order is something hard to come by these days.
Yes, I have to admit we owe that to our mayor. She doesn't allow for any kind of nonsense in her city. She gives the people places to blow off their steam, like the bars, the fighting cage, and casino. But theft, murder, and the lot are dealt with severely.
She's able to police the streets? Taylor asked, shocked. She hadn't seen anyone wearing a uniform or badge. How many officers does she have?
Not police.
Larry stopped at the top of the hill where a black wrought iron fence with the symbol of a roaring lion in its center hindered their progress.
The people here love her enough to police themselves. She holds a small contingent of full-time sheriffs and deputies, but I think the people understand what would happen if they all let themselves go. The locals stick together and keep things in check. If we do ever have a problem, it's usually outsiders passing through.
Imagine that.
Lou gave Taylor a sideways glance.
A society of people who look out for one another. A government that lets the people be unless they need help.
A man and woman dressed in light furs and boots walked to the iron gate. They eyed Taylor and Lou suspiciously before exchanging words with Larry in low tones.
Your enhanced hearing picking this up?
Taylor asked Lou out of the side of her mouth.
Yeah.
Well, what are they saying?
mostly talking trash on how you're too small to have taken out Big T in the cage.
Taylor turned her sideways glance at Lou into a full stare. He was as likely to be telling the truth as making up the whole thing to get a rise out of her. A loud click broke her line of thought, and the two guards opened the gate to allow the group entrance. The idea that this could all be some kind of elaborate trap was in the back of her mind. They walked through the entry to the large estate, and the gate clicked closed behind them. Taylor prepared herself for anything. 2. Taylor. The building was a large wooden house that looked more like a meeting hall than a home. It bore a bulky, flapping flag of a black lion's head on a blue background. Another pair of guards looked them over with suspicion. Despite their questioning gaze, two solid oak doors slid back on rails, and they allowed them to enter. Taylor's estimation of the structure being more of a meeting place than a home was correct. A giant room led them toward a long table and three large chairs where their hosts waited. More doors deeper in the chamber opened up to what Taylor guessed were living quarters. The hall had a vaulted ceiling, with animal horns mounted along the walls. A thick pelt cushioned their footfalls as they approached the mayor. Both the pair of guards that let them through the gate and the pair that opened the hall doors followed close behind. When the group reached the opposite end of the hall, Taylor was confused at who she saw waiting for them. An astute-looking older man sat on one side, and a strong, straight-backed female on the other side of a young girl. The girl couldn't be much older than Sydney when Taylor first met her. She had braided blonde hair, intense green eyes, and a stare that belonged to someone three times her age.
"Madam Mayor,"
Larry said, stepping to the side and displaying Taylor and Lou with a grand gesture of his hands as if they were prized pieces of art to display.
"These are the strangers requesting an audience with you."
The young girl pursed her lips and examined first Taylor and then Lou. The silence was beginning to grow uncomfortable. Larry was shifting back and forth on his feet, literally biting his lip until the child mayor decided to break the silence.
"I heard you wanted an audience with me. To such an extent, you entered the cage and defeated Big T to gain my attention."
"That's right," Taylor nodded. "It's important that I speak with you."
"Then speak."
Thrown off by the adult-like manner with which the girl handled herself, Taylor rushed to gather her thoughts. She had never been one for long speeches, and even less for debates. "We come from a city in Washington called New Olympia. We've defeated the Dread there, and now we're traveling abroad, searching for allies. Their safety in numbers. With what we've seen, it's going to take every living human being banding together if we are going to have a chance at stopping the Dread."
"Stopping the Dread?"
The woman to the girl's left laughed.
"Sightings of the Dread have been diminishing by the day. Our scouts haven't even come across one in the last week. You make it sound like we're in the middle of a war."
"We are," Taylor stated, returning the woman's cold glare. "I've seen what they're plotting. The world they're building, they plan to construct on the backs of human slaves. Those unwilling to become one of their mercenaries will be forced into servitude." The fiery woman sitting beside the mayor was about to continue the argument when the elderly man opposite her raised his hand in a sign of peace. He addressed Taylor in a calm, even tone.
"I understand your concern, but if we are in such immediate danger, how do you explain the absence of the Dread? We were all here when the madness was at its peak. We all fought the Dread day and night. It seems to me they are gone, or if we dare hope, are dying off."
Taylor took a long, deep breath. She hated the words she was going to have to say next.
"I don't know for certain why. What I do know..." "This is a waste of time."
The woman beside the mayor rolled her eyes.
"You come preaching doom and destruction in a time that's never been better." It's only on rare occasion that my treasurer and captain agree.
The mayor glanced at first the man, then the woman in turn.
I find myself wondering the same thing. If what you say is true, shouldn't the dread be increasing in number and attacks instead of disappearing?
It's what they want us to think.
Taylor, unable to keep her hands at her sides, raised them to add strength to her words.
The best our enemy can hope for is to lull us into a false sense of security. Where the dread are hiding or what they are doing is something I plan on finding out, but you have to trust me that this fight is far from over. The dread is evolving certain people. They're calling themselves dread lieutenants. These people have abilities they'll use to call humans to their side. The dread mindless we've all fought and killed are an old model, probably sent into hiding as some kind of insurance if things go bad for them.
Three pairs of eyes looked back at Taylor. It was clear what the elderly man thought. His raised eyebrows and pursed lips said it all. To Taylor's surprise, it was actually the town captain who began whispering into the mayor's ear in earnest. Taylor looked to Lou for the first time since they entered the building. He returned her gaze with a shrug.
Linda?
The captain said to the woman standing behind Taylor, who had opened the outside gate for them.
You can take your deputies outside.
Are you sure, Captain?
The woman said with a confused look to her superior. Taylor caught a scowl across the eyes of the mayor.
I mean, yes, right away.
Linda motioned to the other three guards to follow.
Should I leave as well?
Larry volunteered with a hard swallow.
I wouldn't want to get in the way of political matters or beheadings or whatever it is you plan to do next with these two. I don't want you to get the wrong idea. I'm not their friend or anything. I don't even like them, really. Can I just go?
No.
The mayor fixed him with a stern glare.
It's better you stay for this, Larry. I trust you.
Larry smiled weakly, clearly trying to hide the fact that he'd rather be somewhere else.
What is it I don't know?
The treasurer asked as the sheriff and deputies exited and the doors to the hall slid shut.
Kimberly?
The mayor signaled to the woman by her side.
Inform Chris and Larry what you saw.
The hardness to the woman escaped the captain like air being let out of a tire. Fear wasn't quite the right word for her expression. It was more like respect for the unknown. She licked her lips, searching for the words.
You saw one of them, didn't you?
Lou said.
You saw one of these dread lieutenants.
I don't know what I saw.
Kimberly lifted her eyes, searching the rafters, as if somewhere they were hiding the words she needed.
I was out on the North Patrol a few weeks ago. It was twilight. The sun was in that part of the sky where it couldn't decide if it was completely lost to the horizon just yet. I'd already sent my men back to Great Falls. Our patrol route had ended, but there was some kind of feeling that told me I needed to ride on to the top of this hill. I don't know why, but I listened to it, and when I reached the peak I saw something I can't explain.
It was clear recalling the memory was difficult for Kimberly. She was playing with her tongue across the inside of her mouth, as well as swallowing and trying to regain lost saliva. Taylor took the moment to reevaluate the mayor and her staff. Chris was looking on wide-eyed, the mayor herself thoughtful, Larry about to burst, his mouth so wide she thought he would pop his jaw. Any idea of this being some kind of trap was gone. Kimberly was having too difficult of a time relating the facts to be acting. Chris and Larry too caught up in the story to be faking.
There were thousands of them, maybe hundreds of thousands, marching through the plateau, barely making a sound. How do that many beings move with so little sound?
Kimberly cleared her throat before shaking her head and moving on from her own unanswered question.
The lights they held were a mix of torches, lanterns, and flashlights. For some reason, my eyes were drawn to one man in particular. I was too far away to see details, but he was tall, wrapped in blackness, like the stuff was swirling around him. And I swear, he saw me. In that moment, I felt like I was being held down in a bucket of ice water. Like, I couldn't move. Even my horse went rigid. Every muscle in his body tightened underneath me, as if he too was being held in place. I don't know how much time passed, but by the time I could snap out of it, they were gone.
Why was I not immediately made aware of this?
Chris was the first to find his voice.
Barbara, I should have known. I've counseled your mother and father before you, and now you to the best of my ability. But how can I offer sound advice if you withhold the truth from me?
The man and his group moved on. There was no need to worry the town. I've had riders out every day since. There's no sign of them. The mayor said, with finality, as if that was the end of that particular conversation.
Larry, close your mouth.
Larry licked his lips and blinked as if he was just awoken from a dream.
What? Oh, yes, ma'am.
What does it mean?
Barbara asked, ignoring Kimberly, who still appeared troubled by the memory.
You know what she saw, don't you? You know who he is.
To Taylor's surprise, the child mayor was addressing Lou instead of her.
His name is Liberty Echo.
Lou fought a shudder. For the first time since Taylor met him, concern was etched in his eyes.
If he was heading east, I have an idea where he's going.
3. Sydney.
This is miserable, like some kind of weird punishment miserable. Wait, am I being punished for something?
It wasn't like Sydney to complain, but after hours of practice with Talon, even her good nature was beginning to wear. Her teacher assisted her off the ground for what felt like the 100th time.
I assure you, this is the path you are meant to walk, and you are traveling this road far faster than any in the past. Allow yourself to fail. That is how you learn.
Pulled to her feet by her mentor, Sydney wobbled unsteadily. It had only been a few short weeks since her transformation from a young girl into a teenager. Along with getting accustomed to her longer legs and arms, she was now having to coordinate her movements to adhere to Talon's strict regime of workouts and training exercises. Along with the physical change came another kind of hurdle. A mental game Sydney played in her own mind every day. On one hand, she was grateful for being changed. What Jason had done to her had sped up her ability to help Taylor and the rest of her friends in a physical way. With Talon's help, she would be able to protect her friends. On the opposite side of that same coin was the idea that she had lost her childhood. Even now, at her young age, she was branded with the reality that the world was a very brutal and barren place. She would never recover the years Jason and the Dread took from her.
You still with me, Sydney?
Oh, yes. Sorry. Were you saying something?
Sydney blinked the thoughts of years lost away from her mind and refocused on her teacher.
What did I miss?
Talon had a way of looking at someone that said he knew exactly what you were thinking. It freaked Frank out to no degree.
I was saying that your individual skills are impressive, but that will not be enough. When your time comes, you'll need to both focus and manipulate objects, as well as be decisive with the axe and knife.
I understand.
Sydney took a deep breath and examined the tools of a guardian she held in her hands. A 2-foot-long, smooth-handled axe and a serrated blade made from dark metal.
I want to try again.
I know you do.
Talon gave her a perceptive smile as he lifted his weapons with his mind and floated them to their sheaths, one on either side of his hips.
However, that is enough for one day. You're tired, and besides that, we can't abandon our duties to the city of New Olympia. We all have to participate.
Sydney offered no form of argument, focusing her thoughts.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?